recording, and this is Out Now with Aaron and Abe. I am Aaron, and Abe is unfortunately not here right now, but this should be a fun show regardless, because we got something special cooking up. Out Now is normally a film podcast where we discuss new movies weekly. However, every now and then, like these special bonus episodes, whether it's one of our fun commentary tracks or something completely different, and this is something different except annual, as in we only do this once a year, but we do it and we have a lot of fun. It's our official Sundance special. Yes. Where I bring on a guest to go over the various films that were seen at the Sundance Film Festival this year. And this is a very special Sundance Film Festival because it's the last one taking place in Park City, Utah, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct.
Yes. And so joining me to discuss his experience at the Sundance Film Festival, we have the Deutsch invader himself, Alex Billington.
I've reinvaded my own country to return to Salt Lake City and Park City in Utah. Thank you, Aaron. I'm back. Yes. Glad to be back as always.
Glad to have you here, Alex. How have you been?
Pretty good. I survived this year quite unscathed, thankfully. So I'm doing well.
I've been like crazy busy this first part of the year due to just all kinds of different work I've been doing. So like I tried my best to watch as many as I can online. So I got 11 films in, which is not bad.
Good,
but
good.
I got ones that I know received at least some acclaim as far as like the ones that were like the important ones to watching at the Sundance Film Festival.
Yeah.
That weren't like already studio films that you can't watch. But good. So I may not be able to go toe to toe with you as far as how many films I watched, but I'm happy with the ones that I was able to see. So
yeah, and that's why I'm always excited to discuss these with you, because I'm like, some of the films I don't want to discuss, but I'm like, if you watched it and you have something to say, we should talk about it.
Yeah. So what we will do, we'll just kind of go through run down the films that we watched. But before all that, how was the experience at the festival? Was there anything different as far as it being like the last film festival at specifically in Sundance? Or
not as for the experience of like going to films and everything, not really. It was the same as always in Park City. The biggest difference was that you had a mix of people who kind of treated it. It's funny you say it's the final Park City Utah Sundance, but a lot of people treated it like it was the final Park City, like the final Sundance ever. There were all these people like going like, oh, this is it, I'm never going again. And I'm like, it's not like it's ending, it's just moving. And then the second thing is you had this endless debate. Like, literally everyone in line would be like, what do you think about it moving? Are you happy with it moving? And I think the funny thing is that despite all of these conversations, the main thing that I kept saying, and a lot of people kept saying, is we have no idea what's going to happen. We have no idea what it's going to be like in Boulder when it moves next year. We also just kind of have no idea what the future of the festival is like. It is strangely coincidental that it ended on Robert Redford passing last year, while it also then moves, which feels like a major moment for the festival in general. And that was something that you felt strong because like in the front of every single film, which you probably saw online, there was the Robert Redford video that appears, which is kind of like a memory of him. And then there's also this Sundance Institute video that comes up, which is also this like, in memory, keeping what Robert Redford wanted to do with the festival going. So it wasn't a full-on funeral, but there were some weird vibes. But in general, it still felt like this is Sundance, they're showing their stuff. And I think it came down to the same thing it always comes down to year after year, which is, are the films any good? What are the discoveries? What are we seeing? One of my favorite things about Sundance, which they still do consistently well, is they bring in everyone. Like, literally every single premiere I go to, and even on the online sections, they put the Q&As at the end.
Yeah, which I appreciate.
Like, every single film has the entire cast and crew there, and they're there to talk about it, and they're there to introduce it, and it's exciting. So many film festivals I go to, like, no one shows up, or they just don't do Q&As, or they have a press conference, and I'm like, I love the personal feel of, especially because they're not dressed up, they're just, like, there in their casual winter gear, being like, here I am at Sundance to premiere my film, I'm nervous. And the audience reaction is also very important to me. I love being in Park City because while Cannes and Venice, you get this really dumb, how long was the standing ovation? In Park City, the audience reaction actually is pretty accurate to what people are thinking. There was one time early in the festival, we saw something that no one liked. And you could tell like at the end of the screen, everyone was like slow clapping and there was like barely any applause. And I'm like, I wasn't that good. Clearly, we were all on the same page with this one. So you can tell, and I like that vibe there. But
is that ever awkward? Because knowing that the cast is like fully, the crew are like, everyone's fully there, and like if there's a seemingly audience consensus that the film wasn't like really well received, to like things just proceed as they do anyway with any.
Yeah, I mean, people will still applaud. It just won't be rapturous.
It won't be rapturous. Loud, exactly.
Yeah. Yes. And actually, this is the point, is that I prefer this. I prefer that honesty in their reaction than Cannes and Venice, where, like, it could be the crappiest film, and it still gets a 10-minute standing ovation just because the celebrities are there. That's what I hate about that measurement. I'm like, I like that. Like, I don't think, Aaron, I don't think anyone's going to go up and be like, I hated your film to the celebrity. Although I've heard these kind of stories. But in general, I think people, especially at someone like Sundance, people appreciate the fact that it was made and that these people put effort and time into making it. And even if you didn't like it, you can be like, oh, well, okay, good job. But there's still, I don't think it's awkward. I just think it's part of the experience. I think it's more honest. And I think it's, I personally believe, this is a controversial statement here, but I personally believe that if your film is bad, you should not be told to your face, but you need to know that there is criticism out there. You can't just pretend like everyone loves it, you know? I think that's important to filmmakers, is you need to hear the feedback.
I can understand that for sure. Here's a question for you that I was thinking about as I was watching the films. When you attend a film, like, when you're like going to see a movie, like, are you going based on, like, you read like a brief plot synopsis and you're just choosing to go, or are you going at random, or like, do you have like a process in mind for how you choose which films you're going to go see?
Yeah, I mean, there are a couple of them where all I know is like the title and who's in it. Like, one of the best of the festival, Josephine, all I knew was like, this is the Channing Tatum movie. It's not even really a Channing Tatum. I mean, he's in it, but he's like one of three main characters.
That's the main thing I knew. And then I also found out it was like the soft and quiet director. And I'm like, oh.
Yeah, yeah.
then I got worried. Yeah. Like, we'll talk about that later.
this is usually what happens, is it's kind of like based purely on director. Sometimes I'm like, you know, I got to read a little bit into it. But I like not knowing. And then a lot of it's just like scheduling. Like, you kind of know I'm going to these four films back to back at this theater because this theater is what shows the main premieres and you want to go see all of them there. So like on a day like that, I go into some I have no idea what I'm about to see. I go into some that I'm really excited for. But I generally, and I think a lot of critics prefer this, try to stay as like clear from knowing too much before I'm about to watch it. Just because you want to have that pure experience of like, you like literally you don't know what you're actually. The funniest answer to this, Aaron, is that whenever I tell my parents what films to see, they're always asking me like, Alex, what should we see? And I'm like, I have no idea, because I've had these experiences where I'm like, oh, you should go see this. And then it's a film that my parents should not see. And I'm like, but you don't know that until the film is premiered and you know what it is. But you're telling people to go see things based on these like purely unknown recommendations of no one has seen this. No one knows if there's going to be this horrible scene in it, because they don't want you to know that until you see it. And you're like, oh, go see it. And then they're like, this film killed 10 dogs. And you're like, I didn't know. I didn't know until we were going to see it. That to me is the most awkward thing, is like, I think most of the audience is generally into it, but there's always a few audience members who you really feel like they're like, they walked into the wrong film. And as soon as they're in an awkward scene, they like get up and rush out. And you're like, well, they weren't ready for this, but no one is. So you really never know. You really are walking in blind to a lot of it.
So my follow-up question, the one I wanted to ask originally, is when you go into one of these movies and you don't have no expectation, unless it was a previous screening happened or something, so you already have like some sense of like what people thought. But regardless, when you just sit down and a film starts, are you the kind of person that like can tell if it's going to be something special early on, or are you like willing to give the film like the entire chance to like reveal itself to you?
Aaron, should I answer this honestly or not? No, I'm kidding.
I'll answer this honestly. When I watch these screeners, and I say this, no, like, I also precede this by saying I don't turn the movie off, but my attention tends to like shift a bit because, like, frankly, some of them you're like, I know this isn't gonna like wow me. Like,
yeah, just
within like the first 5 minutes, you can sometimes you just kind of like, you can just kind of tell. I feel like that's a. I know. I think Greta Gerwig said something like that. Like, I can, one year when she was like, on the panel, and it's like, I kind of get it. Like, sometimes you just kind of feel, you're like, yeah, I don't think this is going to be the one. So like, you know, maybe I'm not as just watching this with like, you know, just glued to the screen as I might have been if I'm like more intrigued by like, you know, how it came. That's me.
I'm with you. Because also, we are professionals. This is my job. Yeah. This is your job. We've been doing this for years and years and years. And I know it makes us a little bit, this is kind of why people don't like critics, but it is like, I do, it's not that I know in the first few minutes.
Sure.
But I can tell, and I also kind of like, you know the mechanics of a film. And there are sometimes, especially with Sundance and Cannes and like more experimental films, where I'm not vibing with it, but I'm like, you know what? I want to see where it goes. I want to see what it's doing. But there are also a lot of films where, as you just said, within the first 5-10 minutes, I can either tell that it's great because you just know, or you can tell, like, it's not even the concept. Like, if you don't really know the concept, and in 10 minutes they introduce the concept, and you're like, ugh, this is not my concept, then you know, and it's probably not going to go anywhere interesting. But 99% of the time, I'm going to give the film the benefit of the doubt. I very rarely walk out unless I hate something. So even if I'm not vibing with it, I'm also kind of curious from, like, an artistic standpoint to just see what they're doing. Like, yeah. there was one film here at Sundance, which I did not like. I'll preface with that. But it's called Run Amok. I don't know if you saw it. Did you see it?
I did see that one, yes.
Well, I almost feel like we should just get into them. Because this film is about it's a high school indie comedy, which is cliche for Sundance. But it's like, it starts with this, like, oh, this girl's going. She's going to put on a musical. You're like, cool, cool, cool. Then within like 15 minutes, 20 minutes, they start to reveal the concept. And I hadn't read the synopsis, so I didn't know. And suddenly you realize, like, wait, this is about a school shooting. And it's not just about a school shooting. It doesn't happen in the film, but it's about a woman, a girl in high school whose mother was killed in a school shooting. This is the plot. And this was 10 years ago that this happened. And the school and everything that's happening now is like they're putting on a commemoration, and she's supposed to make a musical for this. So it's kind of like about dealing with the topic of school shootings, but in this weird, awkward way where they're like, she's putting on a musical, but the principal doesn't like this. And she recruits kids to be like part of it, including one of them who I think it's her cousin is the shooter. And I was like, this is so weird. But I'm also like, okay, you this is your idea, and I want to see what you're going to do with this. And most importantly, I'm like, I want to see your conclusion, because if you bring this up in a film, you have to be bold enough to bring us to an interesting point by the end. And I didn't think it did. That's why I didn't like it much.
Yeah, I'm pretty mixed on it, because like I like the idea of what it's doing.
Me too.
And like, yes, you have to be bold to be like, I want to make what ostensibly has the feel and look of a coming of age comedy drama with more emphasis on the comedy, kind of, but also like find a way to say something and make it like impact. And I don't think it pulls it off quite, especially by the end. I feel like the end is pretty lackluster.
Yeah,
like definitely. I feel like if the end wowed me, it could have made up for how middle ground the movie kind of felt throughout. And it's not for lack of trying. Like there's some solid performances, and you have some stars here, Bill Camp, Patrick Wilson, so it's like, this feels like the kind of thing that could, like, if it was better, could easily be picked up and like get buzzworthy kind of praise. Like, you can't wait to see this movie. This is kind of nuts. But instead it just kind of like sits there and you're like, all right, like one of the things it does that I found interesting is, like, because of the aftermath of the shooting, this is the film that actually says, well, let's arm the teachers. Let's show an audience what that would be like. And now, to be fair, they're armed with rubber bullets. They're gun, like, orange guns or rubber bullets. But at the same time, you're like, well, okay, that's a choice. Like, okay, let's see. Like, here's a movie that's trying to dabble with the idea of, well, people say the teacher should be armed. Let's arm them. Let's see what that goes like. And it's like, all right. But yeah, it just doesn't quite pull it up. However, to get back to our original question, like, starting it up, I guess I think I'm less about like whether or not the premise intrigues me, and more of what are the filmmaking choices being made? Like, how does it just like generally look? Like, not many Sundance films look like a sitcom necessarily in the same way that like a lot of modern studio comedies do.
True.
But there's just something about like the texture of a movie where you can kind of tell, like, does this director have a certain level of control over like what, like, do they have a voice, even if it's not the most pronounced voice? You know, they don't have to be Tim Burton as far as having like super stylized vision to like show you something. But like, sometimes you just get like, yeah, all right, this just feels like cliche Sundance movie, you know. It just has like there. For example, another movie I watched, for a positive example, did you see Chasing Summer?
Yes, I did.
Which is what's her name? The director is
Josephine Decker.
Josephine Decker, which I didn't know going in. All I saw was I knew it was Eliza Schlesinger, and I'm like, okay, she got a Sundance, so let's see what that is. And then I found out later, I was like, oh, Josephine Decker, who has a very distinct visual, like, she makes very distinct visual choices. And as I was watching the movie, I'm like, well, this is already not just like a comedian does summer like comedy. There's something here on a directorial level. I'm not going to say the movie is amazing. I like the movie overall, but like, it just, I was immediately engaged because it was showing me something more, like a filmmaker that like had an idea of what they wanted to do beyond just like present the script. So I'm like, okay, like there's something there. Did you like it? I'm trying to determine how you feel about this movie based on how you're reacting to me.
I hated it.
You hated it? Seriously?
Yes. It's like number, it's actually not my least favorite because there's one more below it, but it's like my second least favorite out of 50 films I saw. Actually, the main reason I hated it is because I thought it wasted Josephine Decker. It absolutely felt like this was a paycheck job for her. And actually, in the intro to the film, she comes on stage with this actress, this comedian. It was a Schlesinger. It's Schlesinger, name, yeah. So. And she says, like, she's like, I totally disagree with this woman on everything, but we knew we had to get together and tell this story. And I was like watching this story, and it's not a conservative story, but as you saw, it's a very Texas story. It's like the most Texas film I've ever seen. And it's not that it's like right wing in any way, but there were moments in it where I'm like, this is kind of weird. Like in a, are we sure this is progressive? But I also felt like Josephine Decker was like, well, I gotta get my, like, she hasn't made a film in like 5 years, right? She's like, I gotta pay my bills. So here I am going to shoot this Texas movie, and it's about a woman doing her thing. So she's going to make it. And I missed her flourishes. And actually, the reason why it's interesting you bring this up is that, as we were saying, from the moment it started, I'm like, this looks like a street meme movie, which Sundance gets into nowadays because a lot of their stuff is so indie they can't afford good DPs and lighting. But at the same time, I was watching this, and I was like, this is glossy junk that Decker should not be doing, and here she is making this thing.
I didn't find it glossy. I'm not gonna say it was the most revolutionary looking movie I saw, but I would have expected the director of Madeline to make this movie?
Yeah,
like,
exactly,
not necessarily. But I do think because it's her, it has more going on than it would have if it was just like random comedy director that made this movie. I do think there's something more, specifically in certain scenes, like there's a couple like intimacy montages basically that take place from like there's like these are shot more tenderly and intimate than I'd like expect a movie like this to have, and I'm like there's something like
the hurricane stuff I like too,
and I get it, you don't like the film, I like the film a bit more. Again, it's not even my favorite film of the fest, it's just more of like I was entertained by this. I can see a point as far as being like, I wouldn't say necessarily hack work, but it does feel like, yes, if I knew beforehand Josephine Decker did this, or like, you know, new, if I was going in thinking this is the new Decker movie, yeah, I'd be like, well, this is different. But at the same time, like, well, you know, maybe just want to do something that's not so like thematically heavy in the same way that Battle of Madeline, or what's the other one? The Moss movie. What's it?
Oh yeah, I forget the name of it too.
Shirley.
Yeah, Shirley. Which I also didn't like.
I actually wasn't a fan of Shirley.
Yeah, exactly.
But then she did one with Jason Segel too, right? That was another one.
Maybe a long time ago, yeah. I'm not sure.
It was after, I think it was actually another Sundance movie. I think that's when I saw it.
Okay.
But regardless. Anyway, okay. Well, look, we already covered two films and the art of Sundance filmmaking, so there you go.
Yeah, but actually, the other funniest thing you made me think of now is that sometimes I don't have the choice to not know, because obviously I sit down in the film and they bring the director out, and you're like, it's Josephine Decker, and now I know what I'm seeing. But of course, you still don't know. Or like with Josephine, they brought the director out. I haven't seen her first film. And so I was like waiting. I was like, okay, you're also, this is another interesting part of your question, is that sometimes during the director's intro, I could be like, wow, they're saying really interesting things. This is going to be cool. Then other times in the intro, you're like, does this person actually like the film they made? Like, or, you know, or like, they're just too nervous to talk about it. And you're like, I don't know what we're going to get into. But again, we have a little intro, and then we get to know them for 2 minutes, and then we get thrown into the film. And I think the purity also of, as your experience with Decker, is that you don't, I think it's better to not go in with expectations, to have like a complete blank slate for a lot of what you're seeing at Sundance, to kind of take it on its own terms. I think that's very helpful for a lot of films.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, obviously you want to like play fair the best that you can with all of this. That's, you know, the least that one can do. But at the same time, you have to manage, you know, you have to do a lot of it. You have to manage your time. You have to, you can play fair, but you can also like use your experience to like help give you the best advantage you have as far as experiencing the fest you want, the way you want to experience it. Now, again, there's no film that I like turned off because I'm like, I don't like this. mainly because there's no film that I hated while watching the movie.
But what's your least favorite then, Aaron? I want to know what your least favorite is.
Let me go back to this list of movies. Let's see. Let's see. Carousel. I feel like Carousel, I was kind of like, where are we going with this? Like, I feel like I got the idea early on, then it kind of kept going despite some like good scenes, and good performances. That so this is the one with Chris Pine and Jenny Slate and what's her name? The Ant-Man's daughter. are we there? Yeah, to be Margaret. What's her face? Abby Ryder Forston, and it's directed by Rachel Lambert, who did Sometimes I Think About Dying, and this is decidedly different from that movie, which is I think what threw me off. Where I'm like, that movie was much more of a. I don't even know how you describe it, but it's a very pronounced dark comedy where this is more like a relationship drama. Watching it given the ensemble it has, because it also has like what Sam Waterston and among
Yeah,
others,
as the dad, yeah.
there's like a number of people in there, and I kept thinking, okay, are we going to like have more of these? Is it going to be more of an ensemble thing, or are we just going to focus on this one thing? And I'm like, okay. I get what we're doing here, and I just kind of, I didn't, I don't think I cared enough about the relationship that formed between Pine and Slate, where I'm like, do we need almost 2 hours to deal with this? Is there anything else we need to deal with? I was enjoying the daughter stuff because she has like she's on the debate team, but she has like she has like, how do you describe it? She has kind of like issues with her body, and so it makes it a challenge for her to like. To be able to like study in the same way that all the other kids can or what have you, and it's and Pine plays like a doctor, so there's like other family drama things going on here where I'm like, would if this stuff took the re took like the helm of the movie, would it be stronger or I don't know, and it just overall is like, I'm watching this, but I'm just not like fully engaged by it. So I think that's probably the least of the films that I watched.
Yeah, same here.
Interesting. We're similar like that.
Almost everyone I talked to, except for like one critic, really didn't like it. And it was nice because we're like, well, finally we all agree on this one being bad. Whereas almost everything else at the festival was a mix. Like some people loved it, some people hated it. My biggest beef with it, similar to what you were saying, was that I just did not buy Chris Pine as a doctor and Jenny Slate. She's like a lawyer who kind of gives up and becomes a teacher, basically. It's not that I didn't buy her, but like you, I didn't buy the relationship. I didn't just like it all felt so weird and awkward and not even forced, but just like you're like, it's this is just performative, doesn't work, no magic, no chemistry. With the relationship itself is kind of awkward because it's this supposed to be like they had a relationship 20 years ago and they're picking it up again, but like they still don't really know how to deal with each other. I don't know, it's a strange film. And I don't even think it's gonna go anywhere. I think there was a film last year that we also no one liked, and it still hasn't been released a year later. And I'm like, I don't know if the film was ever gonna see the light of day. There was something else like that. And I'm like, I know this has a major cast, but I think the negative buzz on it is so harsh. I'm like, and the indie industry is so tough. I'm like, will people even see this one day? Maybe if they dump it on Netflix or Prime or something.
It's weird because like Atropia, which won like the big Sundance Award last year, like just came out like a couple weeks ago, and that was like a hit, even though it feels like the response is kind of muted to it. When I was like, that's the one that won, like, but it like just came out, so it's like even the films that are considered like a hit at Sundance can like have trouble finding distribution or what have you. So it's like this.
Sometimes they downplay it. Sometimes they're like, if it had negative buzz, they're like, let's wait 2 years so everyone has forgotten about it, and then rename it and re-release it. And you're like, oh, that was the one. Wait, that we all hated 2 years ago. I don't know.
Yeah, I've seen
Carousel, you could
those.
see that happening. You could see them being like renaming it from Carousel, which kind of works, but yeah.
There's one film I watched that I didn't get to finish, which I was annoyed by. Like I started it and then I had to go and then I didn't realize like my window expired and it never like came up again. It was Big Girls Don't Cry. Did you watch that one?
I did the New Zealand
The New
coming of
Zealand
age
one.
one.
Yeah, I was enjoying it. I was like, I was 20 minutes away from finishing it, so like I don't know what happens at the end of this thing, but I was like, well, I want to see how this finishes up. It's
Well, yeah. I
it
won't
was
tell you, but
I'll ask you after, but it was I was it wasn't like reinvented the wheel as far as like coming of age stories go, but I was still like, oh, I'm enjoying this, and then I have to go, and now I feel bad because I didn't get to finish
You gotta
it.
find out what happened to
So
her.
I gotta find out what happens. But
I like that one too. I also was a little bit frustrated because I think the filmmaking is vastly better than the story. Like,
I would
there's just
agree.
the beautiful shots and like moody moments, and then it's just like, ah, she's just dealing with being a high school
Yeah, it's the same kind
idiot,
of
you know?
exactly.
Like, I was like,
And I
oh,
also
okay.
and like Noah Taylor plays the dad, and I was really enjoying his work here because he's like, for one thing, I don't think I've ever seen like Noah Taylor just play like dad. He's always playing like nefarious murderer or like guy that gives all the exposition. He's never just like, yeah, he's just a dad who's trying to, he's trying his best with two daughters. That's all he's got. But yeah,
that's always, my favorite thing in Sundance movies is when that actor you like totally love just pops up in the middle of it for like 20 minutes. You're like, I had no idea that this guy's in here, and he's like super cool. Sometimes they steal the whole movie. You're like, yes, this guy, I love him.
Whoever, that's why I got excited when Bill Camp popped up in Run Amok, and then I'm like, he's kind of the worst part of this movie. That's not really helping for, odd for him. But
true.
What else? Nate, let's know what's another one you want to go over.
Yeah, we should talk about some good ones. Everything we've discussed so far has been like not great.
Actually, well, since we have limited time, let's knock Josephine out of the way so we don't have to like
go for it.
Because I'd like to think that you like Josephine at least.
I love Josephine, which is a weird thing to say about a film so horrible, but with a horrible topic. But I love it.
Yeah, so I was a big fan of it as well. This is from director Befti Arujo, who a couple years ago made a film called Soft and Quiet, which I need to look at what my rating was. It was entirely mixed because I was like, I get what this movie's doing, but it's very hard to watch. And I had troubles. But it did. That was a film that was shot on like one take, as I recall. Or like, or at least it was designed to look like it was one long take. If, as far as I know, it probably was. But you know, different movies do different things. Regardless, this movie's not, but it presents it in a way where at first I was like, is this going to be that too? At first I was like, is this going to be like Nickel Boys? Because it gives you a first-person perspective of this girl, of the little girl Josephine. Mm-hmm. I was like, is it going to be like that the whole movie? It's like, no, it eventually edits out of that and becomes like a traditional kind of narrative. But the film itself, without getting too far into detail, basically there's a little girl, 8 years old. She's running into the park with her dad, played by Channing Tatum, to like practice soccer. And they get separated for just because they get separated on a trail, and the little girl witnesses something horrible that happens. Fortunately, she's not in harm. She doesn't come into harm under this, but like things happen. The people involved are basically either arrested or brought in, and the rest of the film deals with how this little girl's like, you know, the trauma that results because of the situation she was a witness to, as well as the fallout of that situation to a point, and how her parents also deal with it. I think it's a good way without spoiling anything about how to summarize that film. I really enjoyed this movie in the way that, you know, obviously not because of like the content of it, but the way it's presented, the way it's acted, I think the whole thing, like, it's very effective. It's a very effective drama. How'd you feel about it?
I think what impressed me the most is the filmmaking choices, which is something you mentioned earlier. Like, it's not the first time we've seen this story, but I think it's the first time we've seen it kind of from this perspective, and also from this, like, it's brutally honest in how it has to deal with this fallout. Like, a lot of the film is how this little girl, I don't know what she's like, 9 years old, and I think in the film, how she has to, or 11, somewhere in between there.
She's like,
how
eight. She's young. Yeah.
Yeah. How she has to deal with realizing what she saw and what happened, and also just like the legal ramifications and how that plays out. And that's extremely heavy for someone her age to deal with. And of course, the director said she experiences herself at age 8 and has been waiting to write this film her whole life. So it's not something that's just imagined to make us talk about. This is something that actually happens in the real life. But then to add the filmmaking flourishes she did, but also to make you feel everything about it. There's this, I don't even want to spoil it, but there's this character who appears a lot in the scenes. Yeah. And while some people, I've heard some criticism of that, to me, I thought that was brilliant in like an unsettling way, where this character like haunts the frames, almost like Long Legs, where you see this kind of demon in the background. Mm-hmm. And yes, it's a creative choice, but I thought it was a smart creative choice. And I thought it was a smart creative choice that among the many in the film makes you feel like this film isn't just a typical story, but adds depth to the filmmaking as a part of the conversation. And that to me is like, especially when I see 50 films and a lot of them are just like bland, put the script on scene. Here you have something that elevates it through all of these choices throughout that. I'm just like, this filmmaker knows her shit, and she has done an incredible job bringing this to screen to tell this really uncomfortable story. And also, again, without giving away too much, where she leads it to at the end. Because I was like, I also see so many films nowadays that leave me so depressed that I'm like, please don't leave us on a depressed ending here. And she doesn't. She takes us to, I mean, it is a tough point to get there, but I liked where it is. It's like there's a little bit of hope. There's a little bit of ah, this is how we deal with this in the world, and this is where what we can do and where we can go. And there's a line, because you weren't there, there was a line in the courtroom scene that the entire audience erupted in cheers at. It was a great moment. Yeah,
I imagine I know what it is.
Yeah. And I was like, that was another one where I just felt like the audience is that into it and was that like connected to it, that experience of watching it, but also just the feeling of she knows what she's doing with the story and she can put it on screen in that way was incredible. And it reminds me a lot of a film at Sundance, I think it's like 2017, called The Tale, which was
this, the Laura Dern movie.
Yeah, and it was like, it had a tough time getting a release because it's also such a challenging topic, but
yeah, it was an same HBO thing eventually. Yeah,
and same thing, like you're like this is so hard of a story to tell, but they did it so, again, it's so weird to use these words, so beautifully and so powerfully, that you're like, I prefer this kind of filmmaking than the ones that are just, which we get too many of nowadays, which are just like, look how horrible the world is and look how horrible people are. And you're like, great, thank you for that bleak reminder. I want something, I want your story to go somewhere. I want to take away something from it other than just the world can be horrible, but there are some good people. And the other thing that was a relief, going in knowing nothing about it, they were like, Channing Tatum's the father. It's a powerful performance. And I was like, oh God, I hope he's a nice father. Like, I don't want him to be suddenly an asshole. And he's the film is about how nice and good the parents are, despite that they fight a lot in it.
Gemma Chan plays the wife in the movie as well. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, also relieved. I was like, oh God, thank goodness one of them is not a complete a-hole to this girl, because we also don't need this in a film. We need good fathers like he plays.
Yeah, no, it's solidly acted by the adults for sure. I think you know, it's funny because I've been praising Channing Tatum a lot for Roof Man last year, where I think he's really, really good in that film. And here, I don't necessarily would know if like this is like his best, but it's a very good performance. It's just a sign of like how much he's, I think, matured as an actor as far as being able to pull something like this. And so it's worthwhile to see these kinds of performances, in addition to getting a story that's, you know, makes these kind of material interesting and filmmaking that backs it up and everything. So yeah, Josephine, I think we're both big fans on that one.
Yeah, definitely.
Name another one. What's another one you
were? Another one I just want to talk about is Wicker, which I don't think you could see because it wasn't online, right?
No, I didn't see that one.
But it's one of the other like ones people are talking about, because the Wicker stars Alexander Skarsgård and Olivia Colman. Okay. And it's kind of like a fable. And again, not exactly a brand new story. It reminds me a lot of Ruby Sparks in a way, where it's set in like medieval times. Olivia Colman plays this like fish woman. And it's from the directors who made Save Yourselves a couple years ago. Also a Sundance film. Very good film. And And in this story, she's like a stinky, ugly fish woman. And she's like in this town and everyone is like, oh, the fish woman. So she goes to this basket weaver played by Peter Dinklage. And she's like, can you make me, and this is like a not lighthearted, but like a slightly dark, but still amusing comedy. And she says, can you weave me and make me a wicker husband? So the next thing you know, Alexander Skarsgård, in full on, completely believable, looks like he was made from wicker, like a basket, shows up as her wicker husband. And the film then becomes this like hilarious kind of concept about this. The basic root of the story is she has this amazing relationship with the wicker man husband that she gets, and everyone else's husband and wives relationship in this medieval town are crap, and the husbands are horrible, and they all get jealous of her. And it causes this chaos amongst the town, and everything starts to fall apart, and it gets crazy. But the best part about it is Skarsgård continuing his streak of being amazing is absolutely awesome in this. And he's like the makeup is incredible. Like, you're like, did they really glue on wicker pieces onto his face? Because it's real. And my wife, who's also a film critic, said the best way to frame up this film is that Skarsgård is a basket with a dick. And the whole film plays on that kind of humor of he's like, I am a wicker guy who would like to sleep with you. And it's hilarious. It's not the best one of the festival. It's a little obvious in this story, very similar to Ruby Sparks. And I said, even like her, similar kind of story of like a woman who kind of learns about relationships and what happens when you get your ideal relationship. But it's a good film. I think the audience also had a great time watching it. And I really enjoyed it. And it's another one, like standout one, that I think people will really dig once it comes out of the festival.
Very good. I'll shoot another one out there. I saw If I Go, Will They Miss Me? Which I was a really big fan of. Did you see this one?
Yeah, I did. Last night, actually.
Okay, good. It's from director Walter Thomas Hernandez. It's apparently adapted from his own short that was also in Sundance. So this is just the feature length version. Whenever it does that, I'm always like, is that just like a proof of concept version? And then like this is like what the intention was all along. But regardless, the film, the only big name in here, as if they don't necessarily need big names, but the only big name is Danielle Brooks, who plays the mother of this 12-year-old boy, who his father is just coming out of jail, and the boy, he has this kind of, he's very artistic, and he kind of latches on to Greek myth stories, particularly ones about Pegasus.
Yeah,
and he begins to kind of, he does a lot of drawing, and specifically kind of putting his father into these drawings, and his father is just not into it. His father just kind of like dismisses the idea that the son has like this artistic gift, let alone the fact that, you know, he's being depicted in the art itself. And it's kind of it's a mix of narratives where you have like the father contending with just like being out, and, you know, having responsibilities, what have you, been the boy who is like beginning to see visions. Like there's a lot of there's a lot of like airplane imagery that's tied into the fact that he likes like Greek myth. It's like it's like a bold kind of move to make, where it's like he can't, it's not just like he likes Greek myth, it's airplanes, but they represent Greek myth in their own way, and that represents another thing. It's like a double layer of like, but regardless, it's quite good. It's well acted, it's well made. And even as like a coming of age story, I feel like it has a sort of different vibe than other coming of age films. It doesn't really have like a direct notion of being like, oh, there was one eventful summer or like something. It's just more like kind of slice of life type stuff of like what happens when you know, a father comes back into a kid's life, and like, how are we dealing with this? But I thought it was quite good. I agree. I think the performances are quite strong. All around, I think it's really well handled.
Yeah, this is a very late in the fest discovery. Like, I don't think anyone really was thinking about it until the second half. And then all the buzz started, and I'm glad I watched it, because I'm with you. I'm like, wow, this is really good. I actually was, while we were watching it last night, because we had the online screener, I told my wife, I was like, if I was a producer, I would give this guy I'd be like, whatever you want to make next, I'll give you any money to do it. Kind of like Ramel Ross with Nickel Boys. I was like, let this guy do what he wants. He has a vision. He's capable. Even if this film isn't like perfect and it has some little flaws here and there, I'm like, I see the vision of what this guy can do, and I want him to make more. And I really like all those choices. I really love the airplane stuff. I was like, oh, this is cool. Like, there's the scene where they're all like flying on the street. Uh-huh. And they put their arms out. I was like, oh, this is cool. I don't exactly know why, but I dig it.
Yeah, there's something there from a directorial standpoint that really shines. There's a lot of, I don't want to say necessarily symmetry, but there's a lot of like very specific choices being made about framing that, just again, for a director that's, I believe this is like debut feature length film. Like, it just shows like a competence and a confidence,
exactly,
like the kind of choices they're making. Also, good score. Exactly. I want to mention that. Good score.
Yeah. So, beautiful. So. I will agree with some of the other critics, and I know it's cliche to say, but I was like, he borrows a little too much from Moonlight, including like some blue filtered shots and some go to the ocean moments where I'm like, this is almost a direct lift from Moonlight. But if you're going to borrow from anyone, why not borrow from Moonlight? Like, why not borrow from Barry Jenkins? Go for it. Except don't borrow from Lion King.
It's the kind of thing, it's like, oh, I can't believe someone borrowed from another movie. That's never happened before. It's like,
no, yeah, I know.
It's the kind of thing that's like, I can get that being like obvious, I guess, too, but at the same time, it's like, yeah, filmmaking's built off of other filmmakers.
Exactly.
Showing their admiration for other filmmakers.
Exactly.
It's just like, I get it, where it's like, it seems more recent, therefore, how could they, kind of thing, even though it's like, well, I mean, classics, you know, modern classic. You know, it's kind of, plus,
he shows he has his own vision and his own ideas.
Yeah, like, it's not that story. Yeah. It has other things going on.
Definitely.
What's another?
I also want to bring up, because I have to, The Weight, this Ethan Hawke one. I just saw it last night, which was funny. It was like best of the fest at the very end, and I loved it. Called The Weight. Mm-hmm. It's directed by a guy who, I think he's a cinematographer making his feature debut as a director.
Hadrick McKinley.
Yeah. And
very much. Looks like an editor. He looks like, yeah, he's an editor.
Yeah. He admits in interviews, and it's not like it's credited this way, but it's basically a remake of Friedkin's Sorcerer.
Okay. And then it literally has a bridge scene, and it literally has these kind of moments in it that are like lifted but reinterpreted in his story. And the story is basically also it's a 1933 in the middle of the Depression story based on a true event about gold, where FDR was trying to collect all the gold. So Ethan Hawke, who's a prisoner at the time, is given this task, and he obviously, like Sorcerer, he gets three other guys, and these four guys are given the task of carrying this gold on their backs through the wilderness in the Pacific Northwest in Oregon. And they go through hell, and they, you know, come under attack and all these things. Like Sorcerer, they're kind of like this brutal, and it was just so incredibly well shot. The score is this like rock slash, not electro, but kind of, I can't even describe it. It's awesome, and all of it just like, it's one of those things you sit down, you're like, I don't know what we're in for. And then 2 hours go by like this, and you're like, this was killer, man. Just, it flies by, you're in it. Just, and Ethan Hawke is such a badass in this. He's great in everything he's been in recently, so this lives up to that same greatness. And as a film, it just, like, rocks from start to finish. And I actually took my parents. They really liked it too, which is a good sign, because you never know. Like, do I like it just for me? But everyone who was there kind of felt like they came out of it with this energy of like, oh, this is great cinema. Actually, I would even say it didn't even feel like it fit at Sundance, because it felt like a major blockbuster. I was talking to someone after. I was like, a studio could buy this, and they could make probably like 50, 60 million on a regular theatrical release, because it feels like a studio movie. It has Russell Crowe. Is the only other major actor in it. But this is just like, you could sell this as like an action thriller, and people would go see it and have a great time, and it would do well. But as a film that Sundance did play and put in the fest, I was like, dang, this is good. This is really good. One of my not shot right to the top of my list. Maybe not one number one, but somewhere on my top 10 of the fest. Yeah. So I'm actually really looking forward to what you think about it when it comes out.
It sounds great. So I'll keep that in mind for sure.
Yeah.
All right, the next one I'll mention, this is these past three have been my like my favorite ones: Josephine, If I Go, They'll Miss Me, and this one, The Best Summer. This is it's a concert. It's like a documentary film that's revolves around a summer concert. It's directed by Tamara Davis, who was married to Mike D from the Beatles.
Okay, cool.
And it's basically like she just found like a whole bunch of footage from a touring rock festival back in 1995. That's like, it's Beastie Boys, Foo Fighters, Sonic Youth, among others, Rancid, Pavement, and it's just like, it's a time in all these guys' lives where things are like basically pretty great. Like obviously Foo Fighters, they're coming off of, you know, they're basically just forming and coming off of the, you know, dissolution of Nirvana for obvious reasons. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, it's just a lot of like hanging backstage with these like 90s alt groups, and they're all, you know, young, the world is kind of not on fire for a bit. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, you know, somewhat of a peaceful time. And it's just like watching being a fly on the wall, and seeing, you know, these guys just how they were in this kind of period of time in their life. And I think it's really well assembled. I like that there's not necessarily talking heads, but there are real moments where like they just kind of stop and like, you know, ask questions to the various, you know, to Dave Grohl or to the various Beastie Boys, or even like Kim Gordon and some of the other like bands there. Like, so it's the kind of thing I always like, these kind of docs where you're just kind of like in the moment with them, and it's less about like, yeah, it's cool to see the performances or whatnot, but it's less about like the music itself and more about just like, what's the vibe of this? What's the world like at this time? Mm-hmm. What are these groups like? What does it feel like to just be in the moment with these people? Mm-hmm. I think it was expertly done by Questlove with Summer of Soul a few years ago, because that was my number one year. Yeah, but even, you know, there's other movies like that have that similar kind of vibe, where you're just kind of like taking footage and putting it together and like just showing you like a moment and like making kind of like feel something about it. And I thought this was quite, I was just really into this. I really enjoyed the kind of the vibe that it gave me and everything.
Good. I didn't see it actually. I was curious about it, but I didn't catch that one. But this doesn't actually, similar to what you're talking about, where they kind of put footage together. Another one that is a standout in the doc section is Once Upon a Time in Harlem.
I wanted to watch that. Yeah.
I've read some reviews, but I think other critics are just going to go crazy for it. It's basically a reconstructed film from like 1973, I think it was. Mm. No, 1972. where filmmaker William Greaves had shot all this footage of a party in Harlem in 1972 that he arranged. He sent out invites and he's like, get all these black luminaries to come together to this like mansion in Harlem. And he literally just like films it. And his son now has taken all this footage from then and put it together and made this film. And so it's actually the coolest thing about it. It's not just pure party footage. It's restored. It looks great. But he also adds this historical context. Like every person who comes in and comes and starts talking to the camera, he adds this like who this person is, what they did to black history. It was incredible. And you go through this and you're just like, it's this unbelievable time capsule film. I did find it. The funniest thing is that my biggest criticism is that you spend all this time with these people and a lot of it's just them like bickering with each other and fighting about each other. Like some of the funniest scenes are like one guy would be like, that never happened. And the other guy over here is like, this did happen and I don't like this guy. And there's like 10 minutes of that. And you're like, wow, okay. They got to air their grievances out here in the middle of this party. But then there are some like absolutely stunning poetic moments where they literally read poetry and talk about and discuss like how to progress society and all this. It's the kind of film that I think deserves a breakout from Sundance, but also like a lot of people will watch it, just really connect to it and be amazed by not only the fact that you could find this footage and put it together now, but also the historical context of it and like its meaning in the bigger picture of black history in America. It's really incredible.
Yeah, I this just seems right up my alley, so I really hoping we'll be able to check it out sooner rather than later.
Yeah, for sure. This also makes me want to mention, because I could spend hours boring everyone with doc talk, I'll go through some of my favorites quickly and just like mention them. Because, you know, again, there's Sundance is the king of docs. I actually think someone did a check. All five of the documentaries in the nominated for the Academy Awards this year came from Sundance, all five of them. So Sundance kind of like is the king of doc premieres nowadays. So anyway, a lot of the standout ones for me, Give Me the Ball about Billie Jean King, I really loved. There's another socially important one called Everybody to Ken Mer Street about basically an immigration raid in Glasgow, Scotland, and how the community comes together and stops it. It's astonishing. I was like, I also didn't know the story. Another one that I really like called Time and Water, set in Iceland, from the same filmmaker who made the Fire of Love doc a few years ago. There's the John Wilson documentary, The History of Concrete, which is tons of fun. You would think, how does he make a film 95 minutes about concrete interesting, but it's great for the most part. I also really enjoyed a recent talk called Hanging by the Wire about this like gondola
stuck
in Pakistan. Yeah, it's just the other one about Pakistan, two of them about Pakistan this year, was the Last First Winter K2, which is K2 is a mountain in Pakistan, and it's about a bunch of mountaineers trying to climb it. And there's like chaos that happens. And both of these films really shed light on kind of what happens in Pakistan and what's going on. Both of them really fascinating. I'd recommend them. Trying to think of what else that like really, I saw the Salman Rushdie one, Knife, it's called, from Alex Gibney. I was very mixed on it. It's got some interesting moments, but it's just as a film, it lacks this kind of excellence that I really want in a doc, especially when you're seeing 30 docs at Sundance that all should be nominated. You're like, which ones are actually good on a filmmaking level? That's the real question for me. The other one that was really fascinating, although I didn't love it, but I thought it was fascinating, is The Lake, which is about the Great Salt Lake, which is what Salt Lake City is named for, and being in Utah next to the Salt Lake and with my parents and my family who live here in Salt Lake City, understanding the problems with the lake and what's going on and the ecological disaster that is impending. This lake film is this like, it's actually really bleak and almost depressing look at like, they know what the problem is. They just don't know what to do. They do know what to do about it. They just can't get people to do what they need to do about it. But I think it's important because it's like, they're showing it in Utah and they're getting all the Utahns riled up to actually be like, here's what's really going on with your lake, which you need to solve. Yeah, those are the main ones that really stood out to me in terms of docs. And honestly, like I've always had this thing with Sundance is that there's so many great docs that I honestly recommend to people. Like if something seems interesting to you and it played in Sundance, take a chance to just watch it. You know, you're going to find something interesting about it. Even the films I didn't like that are documentaries, I'm like, I was just fascinated by the story. I just was glad to learn about something to be taught like about this community. Usually it's like a community or a person that is this, you've never heard of this person, but you're like, this person is either marginalized or dealing with something or a warrior or someone fighting for something. And you're like, this is so cool that they get to present them in this way. And usually it's fascinating enough to learn something from it. So those are my doc selections from this year.
Great. As far as a couple other movies I saw, I watched Extra Geography. Did you see this one?
Yeah, it was pretty good.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. It's like a, how do you even describe it? It's, I mean, it's another coming of age movie.
Yeah, exactly.
Sundance is big on coming of age stories. It's an English boarding school. It's like two teenage girls who they're like the best friends. They're so close to each other, what have you. And they have this, basically they deal with the fact that, well, they're growing up and that means they're going to start to not only growing apart, but forming other relationships, which include with boys. And, it goes from there. Filmmaking wise, it's kind of it's somewhere in the middle of like a Wes Anderson and a Booksmart. That's kind of like where I was looking at it from, like as far as the kind of style is going forward. It's like it's slightly heightened, but the way that friendship functions, like it's very kind of specific. So I was like, yeah, that's, you know, not that it needs to have a specific comparison to any other filmmakers or whatnot, but that was kind of like the, if I had to like find a way to like describe the vibe of it, that's like where I, what I kind of got out of it. But like I found it entertaining. It was
Me too.
Well performed, but young actors involved or whatnot.
Yeah.
So it was good. What's another one I watched real quick here? Let's see. Bedford Park. Do you see Bedford Park?
Yeah. This is about the Korean woman in New York City, right?
Yeah. What was like the story? I'm trying to remember, what was the story?
Dealing with her parents. Her mom got in a car accident. She has to go home to her parents, but she also deal with her brother.
It's her, her brother is like, yeah.
Okay. She also has to deal with herself, basically. This is a really big thing. She's a wacko in a way, like. And I, like, actually, the thing that I admire what they're doing, but I didn't really like about it, is that, like, she goes home and, like, everyone's a pain in the ass. Like, the dude she meets, her brother, she's a pain, her dad, her mom. I'm like, was there one decent person in this story? And I know it's realism, but I'm like, oh, man, this is kind of tough.
Yeah, the director director Stephanie Ahn, and it's in a lot, and I watched the Q&A on this one, and, like, it's rooted in a lot of the idea of she wanted to tell a story about, you know, that basically provide Asian representation that wasn't about kind of like the standard stuff that you deal with when it comes to like movies acknowledging Asians in film. It's just more of like what's like just exactly. like a real family story, and that's ultimately what this like leans into. Yeah. Going into it, I didn't necessarily think it was gonna be like a laugh riot, but I thought it'd be a little bit, you know, a little lighter, or at least have lighter elements to go with the drama, and it really doesn't. Mm. It's just pretty.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not necessarily like dark, but it's certainly like. Yeah, right. It's just drama going on throughout this movie. But it's well performed. It does the job. It's made well enough. So I ultimately like the movie. It's just it's like, you know, those blind ones are like, all right, see what this is. And I was like, oh, this is not based on literally nothing. This is not what my expectations led me to. But yeah, it's still solid. True.
For sure.
What's another one? Here. Let's see.
All the other ones I want to mention, I don't think you're online. So I'm like, tell me what you've seen, and then I'll rattle off my last favorites.
Okay, I only got a couple more. The other two I saw was Hotch Hand Shake Your Booty.
Mm-hmm. I love this one. I'm a fan, but I know everyone else is like really mixed on it.
I saw a lot of people that really liked this one, or at least I saw a lot of people that were like, "This is like something fun."
Yeah,
it stars
even though it's about a horribly dark topic.
It starts off pretty depressing, but it has vision. It has some style to it, as far as. Yeah. Like literally, it has some very stylish and heightened qualities to what's going on. It stars Rinko Kikuchi. That she's a dancer with a Latin husband. Tragedy strikes. She becomes a widow. this is right away in the movie. It's not really a spoiler. And so she gets into kind of like a state of withdrawal, and then kind of gets back into the thing with a new instructor. And things develop from there. But like it's trying to be like heartwarming and like that's necessarily fun, but certainly like a encouraging kind of movie is like how to deal with like grief and whatnot by you know getting back into like the things that your passions, like, you know, trying to use your passions as a way forward or what have you. And yeah, I think could use more dancing, honestly. I was like, I feel like there should be more dancing in this movie, but
because the few scenes that are incredible, the one on the sidewalk where they like dance fight these guys, and then there's like a performance they go watch. I was like, these are amazing moments that should be, but then I think, Aaron, they had the problem of
then it would have been a musical, basically. And you know people with musicals these days. People will be like, I don't like musicals. I don't want to watch it. But it's like borderline dance musical half the time.
They don't know that going in, though. You just don't have to say musical. Just trick them. That's my logic. Trick them all. But yeah, that's kind of like, it's very enjoyable to the point of like, I would have accepted more dancing from this movie. But it is nice to see Riko Kikuchi like in a lead role in a movie. I was like, oh, that's fun. But let alone not one where it's like dependent on the fact that she's like an Asian woman, where it's like, no, it's like she has like an interracial relationship, basically. And it's like, this is nice. This is something different. It's about, you know, other things beyond just like, I don't know, whatever random cliched plotline you can get. It's like, no, it's like, yeah, it's got the goods. So that's
true.
The last one I watched, or at least the last one I have on my list here, is Hot Water.
Yeah.
This was fine. It's like it's a road trip movie. It's about a kid with a Lebanese mom, and the kid's kind of like, what's the kid?
He's been in a bunch of stuff. We've seen him in a lot of stuff.
Yeah, but like the kid. I don't think the kid, I don't recall, the kid's not on the spectrum. I think he's just kind of different, right? Like that's like the crux of it.
Yeah, I guess because it's kind of an immigrant story, like, you know.
It's got, yeah, that aspect for sure of like the mom and what have you. But essentially they have to travel across, across the country. And it's like their misadventures as they're doing like a road trip as mother and son. And it's fine. Like it's like a bit episodic. Like you run into like various character actors, like Dale Dickey. Who see a lot of Dale Dickey, which I did not expect. but it was like, yeah, like I'm kind of into this, but I feel like, oh, it's not really doing a whole lot that's new. It's just like, okay, this combination of people is different, so that's something.
Sure. I like the two for that exact same reason. Like, it doesn't blow me away, but as something that is a cliche road trip story with a few little different things in it, I enjoyed it. And I also like where it goes. The whole ending with the dad is super kooky and was kind of shocking. Not in a like negative way, but just in a like, oh, okay, that's where we're going. That was another unexpected, like, wait, what? Like, okay. I don't want to give it away to people, but it's, I don't know. It's I agree with you. I like it more than fine, but I wouldn't say it's one of my, you know, top 10. So yeah. I think it's somewhere on my high list, but. Mm-hmm.
That's all the ones I've watched. So what else you got you want to mention real quick?
Good. Well, I mean, again, I could talk for hours and I don't want to bore people. But the other ones I would say are worthy, and to me, not only good films, but like you should seek them out. And I think you'll have a good experience with them, especially if you can see them with an audience. The Only Living Pickpocket in New York, with John Turturro as a pickpocket in New York. Yeah, well, that's actually kind of part of the plot, but you'll see. Very, very good film. Old school filmmaking, nice vibes. Another one that I don't know if
you've seen. Noah Segan directed this.
Yes.
Kid Bloom himself.
Yes, Ryan Johnson produced it. Yeah, it's a very New York story. Like, yeah, I don't want to give it away because it's really there's a lot to like reveal while you're watching it, and it's good. It's also very like small scale. It doesn't try to do anything like crazy or big. You're like, oh, it's just a cool story about Totoro being a pickpocket and dealing with his life. The other one I really like is called The Incomer, which is the Scottish kooky comedy.
For Domhnall Gleeson, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's good. It's good. Franken Lewis is good, but not the best thing ever. It's a story about prisoners, another prison story. Rob Morgan plays an older prisoner who...
I like Rob Morgan.
Yeah, he's great in it because he's an older prisoner who has dementia or Alzheimer's. Mm. And Kingsley Benadire comes in as a young new prisoner, and he takes this job of being like a caretaker for the old prisoners with dementia and Alzheimer's. And he kind of learns his lessons and realizes, and it's this interesting take on it. Very emotional. Not the best one of the festival, but very good. Another one that everyone can't stop talking about is The Invite with Seth Rogen, directed by Olivia Wilde.
This is the one that had the big bidding war.
Yeah, which to be honest with you, didn't deserve, because like it's not a streaming movie, but it's literally a chamber piece. It's literally entirely in one apartment, entirely four people, no one else, just chatting and arguing and things going on. The ensemble's great. It's sold because there was this like huge buzzy vibe to the screen. Like everyone had a great time, you know, and all the, let's just say all the older Sundance ladies, which there are a lot of every year, would not stop talking about it. Like everywhere I went, they were like, oh, Invite, I had such a great time watching this. So I think that's what, I think all the buyers were like, oh, we got a crowd here. Like we can, you know, turn it into a hit. Is it going to make 50 million back? I don't know. You know, like, or they'll just put it on Netflix and Netflix will pay them 50 million later. Who knows? Something, it's A24, but it's good. It's good. I had a good time with it. It's like a remake of another film that has, this story's been told 100 times. It's not, my mom was actually telling me, she's like, I read it and I don't want to see an orgy movie. And I'm like, Mom, it's not an orgy movie, but it's about a couple who is open and they live above Seth Rogen and Olivia Wilde and they come down and they kind of have a conversation about relationships and sex and all these things and some things happen and it's, there is no orgy, but there is, you know, it's just a conversation.
I've seen this kind of movie plenty of times.
Yeah, yes. Exactly, exactly. Yeah. But it's fun. Seth Rogen is actually better than I think I've seen him in the last few years other than The Studio, and it's hilarious. And Olivia Wilde, who, moving on from her controversial last film, actually does a really good job directing this, and her performance in it is also good. It's just a solid film. So those are like my, those are, that's my kind of list of all my favorites. Everything else is either kind of like fine or I just didn't care for it. I also really enjoyed the Greg Araki one, I Want Your Sex, which is similar to the Olivia Wilde one because she's in it and it's also about sex, but completely different in style and tone and comedy because it's Greg Araki and it's super colorful and funky and bright.
Oh, very good. Right. What's that Rob Lowe one that some people were talking about? Was it the
musical? Yeah. So to briefly say something, it's Sundance this year. I noticed that Sundance has a weird duality thing. There are almost like there are always like two films that are very similar to each other. Two Pakistan documentaries. Mm-hmm. There were two road trip films. The Shitheads was the other one. There were two films about, you know, this topic, that topic, The Invite and Want Your Sex, very similar. So the musical is very similar to Run Amok. And that it's another kind of comedy in a high school about a guy put in on a musical, although it's, thankfully it's not about school shootings, but the musical's about a music teacher, I guess. I didn't recognize the guy. I think he's a comedian. And he has a fleeting interest in his coworker, another teacher played by Gillian Anderson. And
Jacobs.
Sorry, yes. I was like, Anderson, Jacobs, which one is it? Yes, Gillian Jacobs, sorry.
Yeah.
And but they kind of come back together after not being together in the summer, and she's moved on and is dating someone else, so he kind of decides to get revenge on her by putting on the craziest musical he can in his high school. And I won't give it away. Most of the film I was like not laughing. I was like, okay, this is not funny, this is weird. Kind of like Run Amok, I'm like, this isn't working for me. However, when they finally get to the musical that he's created and puts on, it reminds me of Rushmore. When you get there and you're like, this is one of the craziest, funniest things I've ever seen. And I didn't laugh for most of the movie, and then I could not stop laughing for the last 20 minutes because they nailed that musical, and it's hilarious. I don't even want to hint at what it is.
Okay.
But again, it's weird because I'm like, do I recommend the film? I don't know. Like, most of it I didn't like, but the payoff is good. And a lot of these films, I think, depend on your kind of humor. Like, do you dig that humor or you don't? You know, like, is that kind of weird, awkward humor your jam or not? Sometimes it works for you, sometimes it doesn't. So this one was not really my jam, but I still enjoyed most of it, some of it.
Yeah. All right. Well, very good. Any final thoughts here before we wrap up?
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad to be here again. I'm glad to see the films. It wasn't the strongest year for me. I think a lot of us agree.
That seems like the vibe. There wasn't like, there's good films, of course, but there wasn't like, oh my God, you guys can't wait to see this movie.
There was no Train Dreams, Aaron. There was no Train Dreams.
No Train Dreams delivered.
The wait is pretty good. Also Pacific Northwest, but
I mean, Josephine's very good. I mean, like, so.
Yeah.
But I know what you mean. There's some years where you just feel like a certain kind of buzz. It's like people go nuts when they see this in theaters and whatnot.
Yeah, but this year there was like two or three of those, and the rest of it was kind of like, no, okay, this is okay. There's a couple of really good, but I don't know. I can spend another hour analyzing this, but I won't. It's more of just like, I hope Sundance continues to try and find the best stuff. I worry that they're doing what some other festivals are doing, which is they're preferring political choices. They're preferring like, oh, because this was made about this topic, we got to show it. And I'm like, that doesn't necessarily mean it's a good film. I know people will also find films that are boring, cliche, like a normal hetero relationship between white people is not going to be the most exciting film. But you know what? If it's a good film, play it. Like, do something. To me, it's still like the quality of the filmmaking matters, not the experimentation. There's very few films this year that I feel like were innovative. Mm-hmm. I feel like there were some really good films with good filmmaking choices. But innovation, I didn't see anything like that here this year. And it doesn't mean the Sundance is struggling. It doesn't mean the Sundance is bad. It just means like this was their crop this year. And we hope that next year in Boulder, when they get there, that they still have damn good films and they can still continue. Like, actually, one of the discussions there to wrap up is that people were kind of asking, do you think they'll have the same kind of quality film? Like, they were saying, do you even think the Hollywood people will show up in Boulder? And I'm thinking to myself, like, I highly doubt that would, you know, like, the Hollywood people are going to show up because they have to. That's the films are there.
Yeah.
The Utah people are not going to show up. That's what will change. And I do think Sundance is still going to have the same programming ability that they've had. It's not like the festival itself is changing.
Yeah.
In general, it's just moving locations. But at the same time, I do hope, which is a little bit of worry, but mainly hope, that they continue to say, okay, we're going to get the best films. It doesn't matter where we are. The festival is still the same. Let's make sure we program and highlight the best, you know, not only newcomer filmmakers, but interesting and innovative, hopefully more innovative films next year.
Yeah. I have certainly curiosity of like how that plays out in Boulder. And actually, I hope we'll actually try to go next year to Boulder because, you know, why not?
Oh, cool.
But the idea of what can change, it's like, I guess the audience is just seeing the movie since White Park City's plays a bit older, right? And Boulder's more of a college town. So
exactly.
But I don't know if that means like the audience world will suddenly shift to the kind of movie it votes for, but I have no idea. I have no idea.
Yeah. So. No one does. We'll see.
Well, Alex, thank you very much for joining me once again to talk about the Sundance Film Festival. Where can people find more of you online?
As always, at firstshowing.net and at firstshowing on Letterboxd and Twitter/X and everywhere else.
Great.
Thank you, Aaron. I'm always glad to do this.
Happy to do this with you. This is always a lot of fun. And I honestly do look forward to like hearing these things so that I'm, you know, the movies start popping up or whatnot. I already have like something of an idea, like The Wait I'm very much looking forward to, among others that have the Once Upon a Time in
Harlem,
in Harlem and everything. Yeah. So yeah, no, I look forward to catching up with some of these. But yeah, thank you again. This podcast, you can find this podcast everywhere you can find podcasts and all that. You know where you can find this stuff. So that's been this our special episode about now, our Sundance special, as always. Thanks to Alex. And yeah, that's going to do it for this episode. So until next time, so long and goodbye.